Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Sex is an integral part of our culture today. There's so much pressure on young people to have sex. Singers, actors, models, athletes are all sexualized. This edition of 411 Teen will look at sex education in the public schools at the request of Sale High School students. A 2011 Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, survey indicates that more than 47% of all high school students say they have had sex. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Gavin Dunsby. Gavin is in the ninth grade. He's into reading and eating and watching old movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Emily Simeon. She is a junior, Sale High School, volunteering dogs and hanging out with her friends. She also enjoys swimming.
Hi.
Savannah Burris. Savannah Burris is our graduating senior at Sale. She's in the cats, books, and sleeping.
Hey, guys.
And Alan Cox. He is the director of K-12 management for Leon County Schools, under which sex education falls.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. My opening question is to your students. Why did you request that we look at this topic?
I think we request it because various parts of this topic come up in some of our other topics, and it's nice to sit down and actually have a discussion on something that by the school system is considered taboo. It's not something that a lot of kids learn about, and therefore, like, lots of kids like to talk about it because it's something that they don't know. And kids are curious because it's a part of our lives. And like I said, they're not taught about it. They don't know about it. And so you talk to others to learn about it.
Okay. Other comments from you all. What would you like to know about the sex education? What do you think is lacking? What do you see as the issues?
Well, like me as a child, I didn't go to Leon County Schools when I was a child. And we kind of did, I went to school in Georgia, and we kind of did have, like, in elementary school, we did not going into depth, but telling us what to know, and I thought that was really good because it taught us as an early age what we shouldn't and should do.
At what point were you first introduced?
I think, like, more towards, like, fifth and, like, fourth grade, like, fourth older child, not, like, kindergartners.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
More older grades because we kind of more understood stuff, and then we weren't too young, like, and childish. We were going to middle school, so they felt comfortable giving it to us.
Gavin, what has been your experience?
With sex education, my middle school actually did do that, but you had to sign up for it. So, that, like, having the option not to kind of bugs me because it's an important part of life.
Okay. Alan, tell us the real deal. I mean, what are the issues and where do things stand as far as sex education and Leon County schools?
Well, it's important that that every student have at least some level of education. Now, we do have 12 state standards that address comprehensive health education. And in comprehensive health education, we get into stuff like disease prevention, pregnancy prevention, dating violence, HIV/AIDS education, STI and STD education, which is sexually transmitted disease and sexually transmitted infections. Mm-hmm. Of all the districts, Leon County needs it because we have some of the highest rates in the state of Florida. Actually, chlamydia puts we're number one out of 67 districts. That's a bacterial infection that may or may not manifest itself in symptoms but can lead to sterility, and so it's heavy in the female population. Gonorrhea and syphilis were 6th and 7th ranked out of 67 districts. And HIV/AIDS, which is not in the news like it used to be, but it's still 4th quartile, which means it's still numbers per 100,000 is very high. So it's very important that we do as much as we can do given the circumstances of the amount of time we have to do the instruction. Mm.
Why do you think the numbers are so high here in Leon County?
Okay, when the Center for Disease Control out of Atlanta looks at when they gather their data, they do ages 15 to 19. Mm. Okay, now so what are 19-year-olds in Leon County? Where do they come from? Well, we get 40,000 of them in here every year at universities, right? So we have this huge influx of not 40,000 students, but a large percentage of them 19, and it doesn't matter. Our kids and students interact with them too, and so that tends to skew our data a little bit. It doesn't matter that that's the reason our numbers are high. They're still here in our community.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Do you have questions or comments, or we can continue? Do you feel I guess my question would be, do you feel like the whole culture is obsessed with sex? Because it's, every place you go, you see it.
I think we kind of have we do have a sex-obsessed culture, but at the same time, it's obsessed with I think it's more obsessed with the taboo of it. You know, like, sex is something that you're not supposed to do, not something you're not supposed to talk about, even though it happens, and then that's what makes it so, I don't really know the word, talked about, I guess, is it's not supposed to be, so I feel like people, like, that's why they want to talk about sex. That's why they want to do it. That's why they want to, like, you know, the sex sales thing. It's because it's something that's supposed to be.
And that's what I was referring to when I said obsessed with sex.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's used to sell toothpaste and tires.
And burgers.
And everything. And so that was where I was coming from exactly when I was talking about being obsessed with it.
Yeah.
What do you all think?
For me, like, when I was in middle school, actually was here in Leon County when I was in middle school, half my population of school was already talking about it, and they weren't scared of it or anything, and I felt like they didn't even have any education on it until they actually, when our school started actually doing sex education things in, like, our science classes after we wrote it. Then they started kind of, but there were still those few children that didn't really care. But then some of them started being like, maybe I shouldn't, because now I'm seeing all the diseases and what it can happen to me. So I think that really does help with younger children, because these children were even younger than me. I was like maybe 14 or 13, and these kids were like, you know, 12 years old coming in. So I'm like, when I was 12 years old, I wasn't thinking about that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, really, it was a culture shock.
Okay.
For me, yeah, like the kids in my middle school and some kids I know out of school, like, they just kept on making jokes, like, not, like, it seemed like they didn't fully understand about it, or, like, some of the more dangerous stuff, some of this, like, stuff can ruin.
When does sex education start here?
Okay, so we're supposed to be doing something based on state statute at K through 12. And so in our elementary schools, we do something called Always Changing Program, which is it's a canned program from Procter & Gamble, but it's a puberty education. So we separate the boys and girls, and we start talking to the boys about the changes that they're either going through or fixing to go through, and the same thing with the girls. Now, for various reasons, puberty has moved down. So most girls hit puberty right around age 9, and boys hit it around 11. Now, when we get into middle school, and this is where we really should be hitting it hardest in sixth grade to me, we used to have sixth grade health in this district, and everybody had to take it. But now we do it through science, and we do it through sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. And then in high school, we take HOPE, which is a state-required class. That stands for Health Opportunities and Physical Education. And then we hit it real hard in biology as well. I've trained all the biology teachers in our county on something called Safer Choices.
Okay.
That's what we do.
All right.
Yeah.
I feel like all the – like you're saying, is that it all starts at about fifth grade, where it's the talk about puberty. And I feel like that's all it is. It never really devolves – the talk never goes from puberty to actual, like, sex and, like, safe sex education. It's all, this is what's happening to your body, this is what's going to happen, and it only stays at that topic. Because in biology, we watched a video that was outdated from, like, the 70s, and it's, like, it was really bad. Oh, it was so bad. But it didn't really cover anything other than, yes, a woman has a uterus. It will bleed. It will hurt. A guy, he over here, he starts growing some hair everywhere. And, like, that's basically what it covered. Mm-hmm. It is nothing else besides that. And that's from fifth grade, that's what it's been for me. Nothing besides just, yep, your body's changing.
Yeah, let me respond to you on that. So one thing that we're hurting for is health education courses. So anything in comprehensive health education, you know, human growth and development and disease prevention and environmental health and nutrition and fitness, all those things which we have in state – I mean our government in this state has voted them into law, but they didn't give us an avenue to teach it. So I don't have health classes. You know, we don't have that anymore. So what I have to do is I have to go to science teachers. I have to go to your biology teacher. And it's not – they now you guys take something called an end of the course exam. And that teacher's evaluated on that. And that school's evaluating how the kids do on that. But yet those health questions aren't on that exam. So you see the problem I've got with getting – so every time somebody brings to me a curriculum area, I've got to go find a group or subject that's willing to do it. In middle school, we do something called choosing the best. Now, choosing the best is an abstinence curriculum. So by law in the state, we have to do abstinence-based but not abstinence only. Okay. Our district is abstinence plus. So we do abstinence education and we do contraceptive education. But in middle school, it's pretty much all abstinence. Now, abstinence education is a lot more than just saying no. Abstinence education is giving y'all students skills, what we call refusal skills. And it's very similar to any kind of what I call prevention education. Now, when you get into high school, you hopefully had body systems, reproductive system in biology, and most of our biology now in ninth grade, you know, even some in middle school. But now we start with the contraceptive education. We start talking about the uses of contraceptions, their effective rates, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So like I said, we trained – I felt like we got all the biology teachers. There may be some that couldn't make that. But that was last year. Last year was the first year we had really had a district curriculum for it.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable, again, I welcome Alan Cox. He's with Leon County Schools. From Stale High School, we have Savannah Burris, we have Emily Simeon, and Gavin Dunsby. We are looking at sex education here in Leon County. I'll turn it to you, or if you had some questions that you want to pose to Mr. Cox, that would be fine.
Why, when it comes to puberty talks, are boys and girls separated? I feel like it should be something that everybody learns because, well, for me personally, I feel like it should be something that everybody learns before biology because a lot of bullying, most bullying goes on in middle school. And I know me personally, I was made fun of every time I got angry because I was on my period if I was angry. And I feel like most middle school age boys have like no actual understanding of what happens with a female during puberty. And the same for girls. I feel like they don't know what happens with guys. Like, why is it not?
So in Leon County Schools, we have it in policy that in third, fourth, and fifth grade, when we do the always changing program, which is I call that puberty education, is we divide them. We divide the boys and girls. Now in middle school, the teacher is teacher choice, and it's school choice. The school can decide, do I want to keep them together or separate them? Because NIMS Middle School may have a different need than Deer Lake Middle School. And Fairview may have a different need than Raw. So that's where you get into some of that site-based decision, you know, on how they exactly want to do it. Also, it relates to the training of the teachers. That policy back was written when we actually had some health class, so we had some health teachers in the – still health educators in the school. And so it was kind of like, did they have enough to keep them all together, or did they have enough teachers to divide them? So there was a lot of reasons that came about. We encourage them – so in middle school, it's school choice, and in high school, of course, they keep them all together there. Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments? Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, like you said that biology teachers are now being taught about, like, how to teach sex ed. Mm-hmm. Like, during what kind of, like, unit or, like, or something they're supposed to teach would they, like, bring up this topic?
Well, it's interesting you ask that because the end of the course exam in biology is in early May. It used to be in late May. It was early May. So their big lobby back to me here, I'm trying to get them to do it, right, is that, well, it's not on the end of the course exam, and I need my students to focus on photosynthesis or whatever we do in biology till we take the exam. So they do it after the exam. They finish out the year. So here, matter of fact, here in a couple of weeks, they'll start – after the end of course exam's over, they'll start doing that piece of it. It's called Choosing the Best. It's called Safer Choices. That's the high school curriculum.
That's actually really cool because a lot of classes after they're done with the EOC are kind of just stuck in the, well, what do we do now phase, and giving them something to actually do that's really helpful is
right.
Nice.
Right. And we turn them out right before the summer break, right?
So yeah. Right when all that knowledge is fresh in their head for their summer choices.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm actually in biology, so I was worrying I missed this topic in a day or so.
You're lucky you're getting this topic. For me, I'm not going to get this. Like, even though all my education I have learned online or through talking to people in person, things like that, and you're lucky you're actually being taught this, like, from a – teacher, like our reliable biology teacher who everybody loves and
who's so blunt.
Yeah.
Now, is the curriculum or how they teach it, I would think, determined by the teacher themselves?
No, we train everybody.
Everybody so is trained, and they do adhere to it.
Yeah. So you may find this interesting. So our sexually transmitted disease, sexually transmitted infection rate is so bad in Leon County that we have become a district of priority. And so the Department of Education actually pays for all this training. That's how bad it is. Yeah. So they've all been trained by a national trainer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you anticipated one of my questions because my question was going to be to you all, where do you most of you really get your sex education?
Like I said, either through talking to people in person, online, just random facts that I find. Like, I never take anything for face value. If I hear an interesting fact, I'll research it because I'm not just one to take things, like, and, you know, I'm not just one to take things as they are. Like, I don't believe people. I guess I'm – I don't know what the word for that is, but I'm untrusting, I guess.
Yeah.
So
okay. You had a couple questions, and then I'll get to you, too.
Now it's like where I learned it from was one from a video about sex education and how, like, it's unequal in the States, and one from my mom's friend who, like, was describing the difference between men and females, like organs in the in, like, that area.
Okay.
Not sure how to explain it.
Okay. Well, for me, because my mother's very open. She's, like, she's had four daughters. So I'm her fourth daughter, so she's been very open with me about it. I mean, I started – it's the same as Leon County. We did learn about it that sort of way, the puberty and going through that. I didn't learn it in sixth grade, and I don't think Georgia really has a strong curriculum when it comes to middle school with it. Seventh grade, I did learn it in my class because I was got to Leon County by then. Eighth grade year was the year – we did sex education the last week of school, and we got to, like, two pages out of the book, and it really got me upset because I really wanted – because I felt like a lot of kids could have benefited from it because they were, I, like, eighth grade year, they're talking about it, and I could hear them talking about it. because, you know, my school's like, you know, has a very, you know, poor, it was in a very poor area, so it had a very large population of different races. So, you know, it was very culture, so, and no one was afraid to say anything. So, and I felt like more kids, if they would have got more education about it, then right now, like, half the students that used to go to school are pregnant, and I'm like, if we would have got more education, probably half those kids would not be pregnant right now or have children.
How would you assess the sex education that you have had to this point?
Very poor. I feel very, like, learning about all these new programs that are in place, I guess I feel a little cheated because I had to learn everything on my own. I did not have a good comprehensive sex education through Leon County Schools because all these programs are in place after I can get them. I graduate in a month. It's too late for me to go through these programs. Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments?
For me, I'd kind of describe it as, like, really poor because, like, how I only learned, like, through a school – like, during my last year in middle school, and it was, like, during the last semester, and it was, like, every other week.
Okay.
And, like, for me, it's my last year next year, but I'm not going to be taking any more science classes. This is my last year, and I'm taking marine biology right now. And really, that has nothing to do with the human body, so I'm probably not going to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of scale it on being very poor because I mean, I've gotten a little bit, but not to the point where I feel like it would be very beneficial to not just me, but other students that probably really need it.
Why is the topic, and I guess I sort of direct this to you, Alan. First of all, thanks for coming.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
We really do appreciate it, okay? But why is it so difficult to talk about? And I say that because as I was sharing with you, Zena Ziffer was going to come.
Mm-hmm.
I had talked, in fact, she had initiated contact and we had talked about doing this back in the fall, okay? Then she's the project director, as people who may not know, for the school-based HIV, STD, and Teen Pregnancy Prevention Project. That's her whole title. And she let me know that the reason she could not come was because her supervisors didn't want her to come and talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm just, you know, so that's why we're really appreciative of having
you. Right.
But why is it so difficult to talk about? I mean,
here's the interesting thing. We actually had in this county for many, many, many years a required middle school health class that we covered sex education. I'm talking about from the 60s and the 70s and all through the 80s. My mother was she was at Griffin Middle School. She was there 30-something years, and she was a health teacher there. In high school, we had something called life management skills, which was where we taught this, and it was a health class that gave me a place to put this. And here's what happened. It's that something called the FCAT came around. And so all of a sudden we have this big standardized test that we have to hold everybody accountable to, okay? And and politicians got involved with this thing too. So all of a sudden here's this test, and the scores from that test put tremendous amount of pressure on the students because if you don't make a certain score, you're not going to graduate from Florida Public School. The teacher now gets evaluated based on how that does and now gets performance pay, a pay raise based on how the students do. The principal keeps and loses their jobs based on how the school does, and the district gets graded, A, B, C, D, or F districts based on those things. When that kind of accountability got put on a reading and writing and a math test, and the state came back and said, students that don't do good, we're going to say you mandatorily have to put them in intervention programs. The principal said, we've got no room in the curriculum. It takes 24 credits to graduate. So all those classes so those health classes and that life management got kicked to the curb. And so therefore, we have nowhere to teach this instruction. And so a guy like me goes into a school and begs the biology teacher or the middle school science teacher or try to find other areas to put this instruction in. One more thing. Think about this. We teach reading and writing and math for 13 years, K through 12. And we still have a lot of students that have a very hard time with it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, take something like a health behavior. So not only do you have to teach them the cognitive knowledge, but you're trying to change a behavior. Mm-hmm. And we only do it in a little bit of biology and a little bit of 6th or 7th grade science. So, but yet these kids are bombarded by the sexual message day in and day mm-hmm. out through the media. There's exactly. not a show you can watch exactly. or a song you can listen to. So those are some of the – so it's a David and Goliath issue, right?
Right.
So that's where we need more than just the school. We need the parents need to get involved. The churches need to get involved, the community organizations and everything. So
I'm digressing a little bit because what you were saying about the FCAP is somewhat disturbing. What about teachers who have special needs kids or teachers who have kids who are from – environments that are not real conducive to learning? They're penalized for this then, right?
Well, actually, I have a separate curriculum for the special needs kids. Okay. They actually they get taken advantage of more than our regular ed kids. So I have a – so we cannot neglect them. We've mm-hmm. got to – we make sure they get the education, especially on the some of the choices that they make and the dating balance, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, I was talking about the FCAP when you were saying that teacher pay and – principals are if you're at a school that is impoverished,
right,
the students that come there are, you know, lower socioeconomic status.
Right.
We know all of this. They come there, they may not have breakfast. Right. They don't know where lunch is coming from.
Yeah.
They're Title I. Yes. How can you expect them to do well?
And
if they don't do well, then you as the teacher are the principal, are your whole school is penalized
so
for
here's,
that.
So here's an interesting – I'm glad you brought that up. So the prevalence of STIs, STDs is higher at our lower socioeconomic schools. But yet those are the kids that have to have the remediation, right? They're lower readers, right? So it's a double hit.
Right.
Number one, you can't – they need all that education, and they need physical education. They need to be outside moving, but they end up spending all their day doing just reading and writing and math. So the good news is our current legislature and Bill Mumford, Senator Mumford, is really pushing this too, to reduce the amount of tests that students take. It'll be too late for you guys. But, you know, and to draw back some of the emphasis that's put on there, because it's just had a negative effect in some of these other areas.
Okay, because I would think, you know, I know academics are important, but if the health side is not met, how are they going to do the academics?
Amen.
Life skills in general are completely missed. Last year I took Algebra 2. When we were done with the Algebra 2, we had almost a month when we were done with like the ESC, we had almost a month. And we practically begged our teacher to teach us life skills. Things like how to do taxes, how do you write a check? I still don't even know. How are you supposed to fill out a check? These are things that should be taught to us that they're not. All you focus on is the quadratic formula that I can't even remember that I had to learn again mm-hmm. like 2 months ago because I'm basically retaking Algebra 1 and 2 in math for college readiness. And we're just focused so much on that we don't focus on life skills. And sex ed is, to me, is considered life skills. It should be things that you know. And we do have one class now at Sale that it's sort of work release. Like if you have work like during the day, you take this class and it counts as a work release also. Like that's the class that you would be able to get out of. And then also it's life skills. The teacher calls it adulting class because you're learning basic life skill things like how to do taxes and checks. And, you know, she teaches very basic sex ed because she can't go into too much detail because she's not qualified to teach it or something like that. And like that's the only class that you really get to actually learn these skills in.
So there's no what do you do?
Yeah. And this is a new class too. Like it's just this year that it's actually done because
okay. What role does the media play to you all? And we've kind of alluded to it and talked about it. It's in the videos and it's everywhere that you look. But when you think about sex, what role, what influence do you think the media has? Yes, ma'am.
Like for me, like my mom used to talk about it. She didn't even know what it was. She grew up in California, did not know what it was until she was about a senior in high school. She didn't know what it was because there wasn't really TV back then. My mom was going to school in about the probably about the 60s. My mom was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
She's 57 right now. She's 57 now, and she can't believe some of the times how much stuff she sees on TV. And neither can my sisters. They didn't see that stuff on TV. I mean, my sisters learned it in school, but they didn't see it on TV. But now, like, my age, and I'm, like, afraid, you know, my niece, she's in middle school now, and I'm afraid. Because, you know, they talk about it in middle school and stuff, and you see it on TV. I'm scared for the children that are growing up in these societies because it's now everywhere. And, you know, people don't get it. You know, What are we teaching our children, and what are we making the future? We're making it where children, no one tells them that, they're thinking women are objects, and you know, and that's why we have so much. I think that's why we have so much sex trafficking, and all the other prostitution and all the other things, because we the media plays so much parts in it, this, and it's really bad.
Sexual education is required instruction in Florida schools through comprehensive health education, Florida State Statute 1003.42. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
We're going to go to Savannah Burr. Savannah, I had to rudely interrupt you.
It's fine.
We had to take a break, so continue.
It's not the fact that sex is everywhere, because sex is the problem, because sex is a natural thing. I think that it shouldn't be like some big hush-hush secret that's kept about or that's kept from kids, because like I said, it's natural. Kids come from sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I feel like they should know what it is without it being everything is sexy, because that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Is that it's not that sex is everywhere. It's that sexy is mm-hmm. everywhere. Everything's supposed to be sexy. And I feel like kids are pushed younger to start having sex, not that they're pushed to have sex, like, in general. Like, I think everybody, because of our hormones, we're already, like, just by our brains itself being pushed to have sex. I feel mm-hmm. like it's just that
mm-hmm.
younger kids are getting the idea in their head to have sex with each other.
Any other comments?
Yeah. I agree with Savannah. I mean, you know, I feel like the media does protect pertain everything having to be basically mm-hmm. sexy. Like, you know, women can't breastfeed in public anymore.
Let's not get me started on that topic.
That is one thing that really drives me crazy. And it's like, you know, if we didn't pertain everything, then, you know, I feel like, you know, we wouldn't have so many. I mean, it would still happen, but it's not as many teen pregnancies, I really think, if the media stopped putting everything out as being not natural, being, oh, this has to be sexy, if it was just natural, because, I mean, it is a natural thing, but mm-hmm. they push it to be so many other things that should not be pushed like that.
Did you have a comment?
Mm-mm.
Is having sex viewed as a rite of passage?
I think in some parts of America, it is. Like, mm-hmm. it's considered, like, for guys, it's considered, oh, you're a man now. You had sex for the first time. And for girls, it's considered, oh, okay, you got that pesky virginity out of the way. You mm-hmm. know, good for you. You can go on and, you know, become a woman. Not like I. That's how I feel that it is. Like it, yeah, it is kind of a rite of passage in some places, and it shouldn't be.
How much is it that if we talk about it, and I guess I'm saying this also to you, Alan, is the attitude that if we talk about sex, that will encourage kids to engage in sex? I mean, you hear that so often.
Right.
And particularly, we are in the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, because I know this abstinence only, sure, yep, that is an option you need to definitely mm-hmm. inform them about. But all the research, everything says that that does not work. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe in conjunction with some other things, you know, you have that. But abstinent only, and I know we don't do abstinent only, we do other.
Right.
But it just doesn't work, and it seems like the attitude is, don't talk about it.
So let me, in our district here, we are, like I said, abstinence plus.
Uh-huh.
But we do push the abstinence piece first, I guess, and foremost. But let me tell you about a couple things that we follow. We do something called an opt-out letter. So 2 weeks before the instruction starts, we'll send a letter home to the parents. And it's not opt-in, it's opt-out. Now, opt-in is like a parent permission form, okay, like I'm going on a field trip. You're not going to go unless you bring the letter back. An opt-out, and that was written into law that way so that the kids that – for whatever reason, they don't have the support at home that they need, but they don't get the paper back, they go through the instruction. So if they don't bring something back, they're going through the instruction. And also, within that two-week period of time, we have to make sure that all the materials are available for parent preview. Most of the time, that's set up in the guidance department. So if I'm a parent and I get this little letter that they're fixing to start the human growth and development, a la sex ed, that I can now go to the school and I can look at what they're teaching my child, that kind of thing. I got to tell you that there was a time when there would be a significant maybe amount of parents that would opt their kids out of this instruction. That's long been over. We hardly have anybody opt out of instruction in Leon County Schools. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not a group or two that gets upset about something, but less than one in every 800 students opt out.
I think most parents are grateful that they don't have to have the conversation themselves.
They are. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My mom has always been open about everything. If I've had a question, I could ask her. Mm-hmm. So I've never had to go through the embarrassment of, Mommy, what is sex talk? Because I was asking about it before I was even old enough to be embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew it's – I never have a memory of specifically asking my mom what sex was. I just always knew. Mm-hmm. Okay, sex is this, and it creates babies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did I know the nitty-gritty details? No. Mm-hmm. I just knew what it was.
But at that time, that was enough.
Yeah.
That was enough.
As I got older, I wanted to know more.
The education on sex education is age-appropriate, you know? And if you ask the question and answer it correctly, you don't have to give specific details to a 7 or 8 year old.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan, what do you think? I mean, do you agree with that position or where?
Times have definitely changed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the number one show when I was in high school was Three's Company. Y'all remember that show? Y'all don't. Y'all too young. But that was when there was a guy and two girls lived mm-hmm. together in California. But nowadays, I wouldn't even get the first person to watch that. You know, so times have changed. We need this instruction at an early age. We're now in Leon County Schools and most school districts, they teach it from a physiological standpoint. We don't get into the value piece, the value judgments and those kind of things. And we say, if you engage in this activity, here's the possibility of what could happen. Now, we want to protect you, so here's a way that you can be protected if you choose to engage in this activity. So that's a physiological – there are folks that feel like when you do that, you're saying, well, you're giving them permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, you talked about research-based stuff, okay? The reason why this district has gone to an abstinence plus, meaning we do abstinence education, we also do contraceptive education, is because we're required to use evidence-based curriculum. It's just like in reading. When we select a reading curriculum, law says you must use evidence-based. So I have to find a curriculum that's usually vetted from the Department of Education, meaning that they really researched it out, that's already been evidence. It's got stats that prove that it works. Mm-hmm. And that's why we chose what we did in this district. Yeah.
Okay. Questions? Yes, ma'am.
For me, I feel like also, like, if we were able to, I feel like also pregnancy prevention, if teenage girls, the baby dolls. I really think, I mean, I know it's not going to help all the girls, but I think that would really help, not too much, but in my standpoint, I think it would also teach them what it's like to have a child, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what is it going to prepare you for. It's not going to prepare you fully, but I feel like half the girls I used to go to school with, if they would have got that sort of program, they probably would not be pregnant or have a young child right now, and they could probably graduate.
Although I want to add, and I'll come to you, Savannah, that pregnancy rates nationwide for every state have gone down. Now, they're still high. Let me get you wrong. But they're still high, but they have decreased some. And, you know, you can think there's got to be two reasons for it. I mean, can you think of them? It would either be that they are using contraceptive. That's got to be it. Or they're not having as much sex. One or the other.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yes, I know you had a comment.
It's to what Emily was saying. You also got to hold guys, like, if you're going to do something like that in schools, guys have to be held accountable too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, it goes both ways with pregnancy prevention. And if you're going to do a baby doll program like that, because it takes two to tango, and sex is a tango.
Mm-hmm. And you think that those baby doll programs are very...
I think they can be helpful. The class that I was talking about earlier, the adulting class, that they did a rubber glove baby that they filled it with water and kids were carrying it around, and that was supposed to be your baby for a week. And not that that was successful with most kids. We had too many kids that were like, oh my God, it's a rubber glove filled with water. I'm going to slap people with it. I'm going to step on it. I'm going to throw it at people. It's how I got my pickle juice rubber glove idea. I have a frozen rubber glove filled with pickle juice in my freezer at home. It's got a smiley face, and his name is Pubert, and he is my son.
Okay. Yes.
I'm in hope if we did something similar to that, it did not go well for most people. They just, put it on a table or left it in a container while they're walking around through school. And here's the best part. At the end of, this project, we were able to destroy ours. So I took a pencil and stabbed mine, then ripped it out.
Well, we got you here. What do you think would be the most effective? What is the way to go? Okay. What would change the behavior most? I think research had said 47% of high school seniors had had sex. That's high.
Yeah.
Yes, me.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was just here. 27% of ninth graders had had sexual intercourse. This is, what? I'm just reading.
They're like 13.
Here in Florida, I said 47% national. Here in Florida, they have 60% of 12th graders. That's what it's
saying. What's the ninth grader percent?
Ninth graders, 27% of the ninth graders had sexual intercourse. Okay.
Those babies. Oh.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I mean, this is really taboo, but I had this question asked to me, and I was a seventh grader at Griffin Middle School, that if I was a virgin or not. And this is a sixth grader asking an older child and they said, oh, I'm not a virgin. Why aren't you? And I was so upset about that. I'm like, this child is so younger than me. It's still a baby. I mean, I'm a teenager, but they're still a child. And they're talking like this, like not even caring what the consequences of them doing it. And I know probably they
not
have no
caring,
training.
They probably don't even know. I mean, yeah.
And, you know, and it's like they have no training at all. And they feel like how they're talking, they have no training about contraceptives, anything. They're just saying, oh, I do it and it doesn't matter. They are not thinking about the consequences.
Yes.
Yeah. When I was in seventh grade, my mom, like, I'm not sure where she got this from, but she said a statistic that, like, girls around my age, like, good number of them actually have had sex. Mm-hmm. And it's just mm-hmm. kind of startling because, like, you're that young. Why would you be doing this?
Why – we can also focus on who is having sex with girls that young. It's yeah. not just the girls mm-hmm. having sex.
Yeah,
there's
the, right. like the more –
going to be people
– like the scariest thing about it was like the guy – like the – she said the boys who engaged in that, like the part of – or like a bit higher than that.
Yeah.
Like that age-wise.
Well, I know another stat was that nationwide, 30% of the teen girls who have dropped out of high school have dropped out because of pregnancy.
Which I feel...
Which, if you they did know about contraception, go right ahead.
I don't feel it. I feel the reason the girls drop out when they do get pregnant is because they had a lot of teen pregnancies, they have no support because of the stigmas that are behind that. And that's why they end up having to drop out is because they have to take care of the kids. Because most of the time, they don't have money to take care of, to put the kid in daycare or babysitters or things like that. So what else are they going to do but take care of the kid themselves? A lot of schools have no allowance for bringing your kid to class, which I think would actually be very startling. And that might be an effective solution.
That creates a cycle of poverty.
Yeah.
That's all it does. It perpetuates it. Yes.
About like what Savannah's saying, and actually, I'm actually doing a project with another organization here in Tallahassee. We're mm-hmm. actually, it's Junior League of Tallahassee. The team board's actually helping out the Breon House, which is, you know, it helps teen mothers that basically have been kicked out of their house or homeless, and they're helping them go towards their GEDs or they're keeping them in high school. And I feel like if we had more programs like that in different states and, like, different areas, I feel like probably not all, but most likely probably more girls that got pregnant would not drop out. And then the dropout rates would, drop tremendously and we would have a lot more. But that's not saying that girls aren't going to drop out, but, you know, it might help.
No. And it just said 30% of those who drop out. There's still 70% who drop out for a number of other reasons.
Yeah, like
not
being able to reach their graduation requirements, things like that.
Exactly.
And I feel something that also goes into females dropping out, like if they get pregnant, is that this environment at Sail, we have had 2 teen pregnancies this year. Which was surprising. We haven't had any in the past couple years.
And how are they addressed?
They are seniors this year, and both of them are still here because everybody's supportive. Like, there's no nasty talk going around about them. Like, the teachers are all really supportive and always wanting to know, oh, how are they doing? One girl, I think, is 7 months along. She should be having her baby soon. And the other is, like, 4 months pregnant. And both of them they receive support. You know, nobody, like I said, is nasty talking them or, like, anything like that. Because it's just, they're like, oh, okay, that happens. Sorry, if you need anything, let me know. Like, I'll help you if I can. That's the general attitude.
Do we have programs in the high schools for pregnant?
Yeah, we have something called our TAP program, which is our Teenage Parent Program.
Mm-hmm.
And at Lively, which is our technical school, is where the babies can be housed. And then not too far down the road is our Success Academy, and that's where those mothers then go and take classes. So some will take parenting classes there, and they'll take their regular high school courses. So we can now, at the same time, they don't have to go to that teenage parent program.
Okay, that we were reading last night, didn't
they? Yeah, so there's probably only about 10 or so girls that drop their babies off there and then go take the, that are actually in the TAP program. There's another 40 or 50 that drop their baby off and then go to the regular school. Child, Sale, Lincoln,
okay, so Leon. It's accessible to people not.
Yes. Yeah.
Do they have to go to that program? Can they stay in their normal mm-hmm. homeschool?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to, but that offers them support.
Mm-hmm.
How do some of them get their babies to that program? Because it's like if a girl's coming from Childs, she can't reasonably drive all the way across town to
make
drop her baby off.
Yep. Make it quick.
That's a problem, but it is offered to them.
Okay. Well, again, I just want to extend my thanks to you, Alan, very much for coming in. And Savannah Burris, Emily Simeon, and Gavin Dunsby. Thanks for participating. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.